So good afternoon. Oh, great. So my name is Debbie Page Dumrose, and I'm with the Rocky Mountain Research Station in Moscow, Idaho. And I thank Mark Coleman for kind of giving you the lead-in about wood stakes, and Andy Scott for giving you the lead-in, well, and all the other LTSP speakers about LTSP. Today I'm going to talk about below-ground wood decomposition rates on a whole gradient of LTSP plots around the western U.S. And before I start, though, I do have to thank my co-authors. These are all either the site leads or like Marty Jurgensen, who helped us with installation extraction on all of the plots. So, you know, it wouldn't be possible to do a study of this size without all these people helping out. So I want to talk about wood stakes. And we use these wood stakes. They're the same material on every single site, so we can compare sites one with another. And we use this as an index of forest management effects on below ground processes. Before I blind somebody. What I want to talk about, though, on all of these sites, we've put in surface stakes here at the interface with the forest floor and the mineral soil on top of the forest floor. If there's no forest floor, then they're on top of just the mineral soil with no litter on top. But you know, I can only talk about so much in 20 minutes, and so today we're just going to talk about these vertical wood stakes. What's going on in the mineral soil to kind of make it a little bit easy to talk about today. So like I said, these are long-term soil productivity plots, and we span a gradient from southern British Columbia all the way down to northern California. All these sites were put in at the same time, so you can imagine that you'll see as we go along. You can imagine the traveling that was involved. So in case you missed it, here are the LTSP plots and the treatments that are available in the LTSP network. So it spans that whole range from no compaction, no organic matter removal, all the way to severe compaction and all of the organic matter plus the forest floor removed. But we chose to only look at the four corners of this experimental design. So no compaction, bowl only harvesting, no compaction, whole tree and forest floor removal, and then the severe compaction, bowl only and whole tree and forest floor removal. And I am going to talk about some compaction effects because I think that plays into what's going on below ground when we talk about how soil compaction and organic matter removal alter below ground processes. So the wood stake methods, like I mentioned, we put in aspen and pine on every site. Each treatment plot contained two subplots of 25 of these wood stakes of each species so that each time when we went to sample, we could collect five stakes of each species from each subplot, from each treatment, from each rep. You know, you get the picture. And so I want to, you know, it's really hard to talk about this whole range of sites, but I'm going to try and give you kind of a little sense of what these sites were like. We span about 11 degrees in latitude. They were either mixed conifer or pure Douglas fir stands before they were harvested, and most of them were planted back with Douglas fir or a mix of Douglas fir and other species. There was a whole range of soil textures. We went from the popcorn pumice soils in southern Oregon, volcanic ash mix in southern British Columbia. There was clay soils. There were silt loam soils. pH spanned from calcareous up in southern British Columbia to the acidic sites at Fall River. Elevation 300 to 1,500 meters. Annual precip, not very much to a whole lot. Temperature went from about 5.5 to 6 degrees C up to 11 degrees C. And like I mentioned before, these were all these wood stakes were installed at the same time and sampled in the same years. So keep in mind that we're using this as an index. So one other thing I wanted to mention was that this is the amount of forest floor that was removed during harvesting. And so with this whole range of sites, we kind of had in the back of our heads that one of these variables from that whole list and others that are possible, one of these variables would surely explain below ground process changes with organic matter and compaction removal. And so, you know, this is, you know, in my head, surely there would be some relationship between a cool site and a warm site, and you could see some range of decomposition. or high elevation and low elevation, and there would be some range of decomposition along that gradient. Or dry soils versus moist soils, and you could see that whole range of decomposition along that gradient. But then, you know, as time goes on and you start to look at the data and other people come out with papers, Bradford and others came out with this paper that talked about local scale controls and not climate most strongly influenced microbial activity and the decomposition of wood. And I interpret that to mean that the local scale microclimate, not climate from the big models, or large scale data sets, would determine what happens at a local site. And so, remember I just showed you those whole, you know, the whole series of my conceptual model of how all of this data was going to play out. But what really happens is a reality-driven model that, you know, you have to look at soil texture and overstory and compaction and you see where this is going? And inherent soil variability within that small area, these stakes were only put about a foot apart. And so you have these small little microsites, but we had a lot of variability with termites, the organic matter retention treatments, the local climate. We also had our share of grubs, ants, gophers, you name it, we had it. So all of those kind of play into how wood will decompose at a site. And so really, you know, today we're going to talk about organic matter removal, but we're also going to talk about those interactions with local climate conditions and compaction. So take a little closer look. So in case you missed it, though, so this is what our wood stakes look like oftentimes by year 4 or 5. Sometimes they're whole like this. I showed you earlier a stake that had fallen all apart. So that's, you know, kind of the material that we get when we start to dig these things back up. So this is southern British Columbia, just the mineral aspen. So, you know, I could talk about the pine, too. Like I said, you know, there's only so much I can do in 20 minutes. And so here are the 5 sample dates, and this is weight loss of our wood stakes. Uncut, and then the organic matter, compaction, organic matter retained, no compaction, organic matter removed, and then the 2 compaction plots. So here at southern British Columbia, you can see these bars that are sticking up are the organic matter removed plots. And in southern British Columbia, temperature seems to play a bigger role in mediating the decomposition process. It's not compaction, but you can see where the organic matter is removed, decomposition is a little bit higher. Contrast that to southern Oregon, where the organic matter removal decreases soil moisture and there's less decomposition. So in southern Oregon on popcorn pumice soils, what's really more important is moisture retention within the mineral soil profile to aid in that decomposition process rather than a temperature change. So, you know, remember that little model I showed you earlier with all those things that are interacting. So I want to look at aspen decomposition at sample date 5 on all of these sites. And you can kind of see what we're up against here. So here's the organic matter retained, no compaction, is these blue bars. British Columbia, Washington, Idaho, Oregon, California. And then here we add in, here's organic matter removed. This is one of the bars that we saw in southern British Columbia. They go up and down. In California, there was no difference between organic matter removal and organic matter retained. Here's the compaction treatments, these green bars as they come in. And then here's the most severe treatment is these yellow bars, organic matter removed and severe soil compaction. This is an interesting bar here, these 2 in Washington. Once we compacted the soil, they were anaerobic and really had not a lot of fungal activity going on in those soils. And then here's the uncut stand. By and large, the uncut stand is always less than the cut stands in the below ground process work that we've been doing. And so these I've arrayed on the north-south. You know, here's our farthest north site, here's our farthest south site. And wouldn't it be great if there was a nice, you know, those nice straight lines that I showed you earlier? Wouldn't it be great to be able to say, and you know, the ones in the north decompose a lot slower than the ones in the south? But you know, it's not happening here. So then you think, well, you know, what could it be? Well, so I rearranged these. Here's Idaho with the highest elevation to our lowest elevation site. Now, remember earlier I showed you that graph that I said the lower sites would decompose faster than the higher sites. You can almost, if you close your eyes, you could almost imagine that there is a curve that kind of peaks here at the British Columbia sites and then goes down in Washington. But you know, close your eyes, don't fall asleep. Maybe it's annual precipitation that we could array these on. So here's Washington with the most amount of rainfall, and here's my central Idaho sites with the least amount of rainfall. One thing I will point out, though, these California sites, these two with the no organic, it's the severe compaction with and without organic matter, those two had the most termites. And so these two bars are probably driven by termite action in the soil. It's really hard to really talk about, you know, one defining property that you could use to talk about how these treatments above ground alter the below ground processes. And here's temperature. So here's the warmest sites, California, to the coldest sites, British Columbia. You know, these two extremes have about the same amount of decomposition. So, you know, this is the big, what do you mean? You know, so I could say, Dave, what do you think this means? Andy, what do you think it means for you? Yeah, I know. There's really no clear trend of changes in decomposition rate due to temperature, moisture, elevation, organic matter removal, compaction. It really is a site-specific process, and the microclimate at each site and those interacting properties that happen with soil texture, temperature, moisture, organic matter, all of those things are what's really driving what's going on at each site. By and large, our uncut stands have lower decomposition rates than the cut stand, except for those sites in the Washington, Western Washington, where the compacted plots were pretty much flooded, you know, and we didn't get a lot of decay going on in those sites. Where present, invertebrates really do play the game. You know, they're the ones that are driving decomposition. When you have termites on a site, the wood stakes are gone in a very short amount of time. And they play a much greater role than fungi do in terms of decomposition rate. Wet soils, we've talked about this. The wet soils really overall had the lowest decomposition rates, not a lot of oxygen exchange in those soils. Maybe in a site that had high rainfall but a more coarse textured soil, you know, the results might be different than what we found on those fine textured soils in Western Washington. And, you know, this really, really surprised me when we start to look at the data that Southern British Columbia had the highest decomposition rates. I'm still scratching my head about why. Maybe Anya can tell us about that later when she speaks. I'll leave it to you. But, you know, there really is no clear-cut way to say, this site or these sites and this gradient will give you these results. And I think a lot of that means that it's up to us to start talking about the microclimate responses. When people start saying, well, I'm going to model carbon across, you know, the entire U.S. or around the world, and they fail to take into account some of those microclimate and site-specific variables, it's really hard to believe the values that come from those models that say, well, you know, and decomposition rate is X. And, you know, one of the most famous models in the Western U.S. is the forest vegetation simulator model. And they say, you know, all the time on every forest, the decomposition rate will be this. And it doesn't take into account, you know, harvesting, organic matter, temperature, moisture, any of those things. And so I think, you know, that's one of the messages that I hope to leave you with today, is that when you start to think about, you know, what's really driving those below ground processes, that you start to think at the micro scale rather than the macro scale. And it goes back to this talk, it goes back to what Bradford and others had said, that it's really the local scale microclimate that determines below ground process changes on a lot of sites. And so, you know, even though we had this great gradient, we had these great hypotheses, great plan to be able to say, and this is what drives decomp. In the end, it's really a site-specific variable that's driving the decomposition, at least in the western U.S. So thank you. If you have any questions, I think I still have time. Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
We need to have time enough to talk about the above-ground decomp.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
So the stakes that were laid on top of the forest floor or on the top of the mineral soil really didn't decay very fast at all. And probably we're losing lignin over time, but the decay rate is really marginal. But those at the interface between the mineral soil and the forest floor were just cranking to beat all. And sometimes that was even faster than what was going on in the mineral soil. Yeah, it would have been a nice comparison, but, you know, we want to take all your time. Yeah, yeah. Jim. Yeah. Okay. I think, well, you probably both know the answer. On a lot of these sites, we also put in local wood stakes. On their California sites, it was white fir, we put in Douglas fir, we put in hemlock. The southern BC plots, we put in Douglas fir as well. Those all decay at about the same rate that the pine decomposes at. There's really not a lot of difference. Go ahead, Marty. You were going to say something? Oh, yeah.
So, our wood type people say there's not much difference. It's a hard way to get the extractions. So, Douglas fir was kind of tricky trying to get sapling and Douglas fir. Because sapling, to reduce that,
to reduce that.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of cheap thing. Or the end
value.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting that they did use it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Larry.
Yeah, I have no idea how you can handle the termite stuff. But at least on the moisture and the temperature, both of those are non-linear. So do you have enough data to approximate, you know, sort of the field capacity, maximum decomposition curve, and throwing between 10 and 2 or something?
Yeah.
And would it work any better, I guess, if you did that?
And we're working on calculating the number of degree days that a site would get, or the number of, the amount of moisture on a more, yeah. So we're working on that data right now, and hopefully that will help give us some indication that, you know, maybe it's temperature or moisture that's really driving the decomp. Yeah, yeah, good point. Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, when you look at that whole gradient, the most productive site was the Western Washington Fall River site that we heard about earlier today, and it had the lowest decomposition rate. So it really isn't a local fertility thing. I think I'm not really sure what it is, but and it could be that that Western Washington site, even though it's highly fertile, it was also, the mineral soil was also saturated for quite a bit of time, and we just didn't see it. The southern British Columbia site, or the southern Oregon site, was popcorn pumice, very low fertility, but had some of the highest decomposition rates. Yeah. 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 Kat.
So if you take the termites out of it and leave, say, a relationship with fungi, would you go so far as to say you think the fungi are the drivers on the rates? And then we're just trying to figure out what it is that it cranks these guys up, or is there going to be some other major influence on race there?
I think it is fungi. I think, though, that on the sites that were compacted that have a lot of moisture, it was anaerobic decay and bacteria were doing the rot rather than the fungi. Yeah. And so, you know, so maybe in some places we find that the wood stakes are just covered with armillaria rhizomorphs, and it's just, you know, that the fungi were just moving through the soil and they found our wood stake. I think the same works for termites. They, you know, we have stakes next to each other. Some have termites, some don't. But I do think it is more of a fungal decay process when you exclude the termites, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if I might ask a follow-on question, sometimes fungi compete with each other.
I know.
Do you have evidence of the species of fungi that were in these soils and attacking them, and did you find kind of zonation and then evidence of this little fungal war going on?
we do see a lot of zone lines in our wood stakes on some sites, and as Mark mentioned, we are doing the fungal DNA work now on a lot of our wood stakes. These early ones, we had no clue, I shouldn't say we had no clue what we were doing, but that wasn't part of the whole plan. It was to do the fungal DNA, but now that we've added new sites, we are doing that fungal ID work. Yeah. Because I'm what's standing between people and the coffee in the back of the room.
So,